in the room right now.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. That is a
this is aging before your eyes right here, okay?
Like which one's Andy and which one's Dr. Rogers?
I was about to say, you can't tell. That's my older, that's mine and Ben's oldest brother, Tom. So he's been really nice. He cooked for me tonight, so I got some food.
Oh, and, did you go to the kitchen of I'm trying to think of another kitchen that's not Tom's, because I don't believe you for one second that he cooked for you. He's never.
Let's just say I got to the house and food was here.
Katie got it.
I didn't ask questions. Not even sure if we ordered it. Maybe Katie ended up ordering it. It just happened to be here when I was here.
There we go. Look at that. Katie knows exactly what's going on.
She knows.
It was food from Nick's Kitchen. Shout out to Nick's over in Kingsport. I need to go there. Apparently it's awesome.
Yeah. So good. I see some fun people in the house. Rick is in the house. I love Rick. It's so nice to see you too. If you want some good information, he is one of the smartest individuals I know.
Well, there we go. There we go.
He is. We have so much fun every time he comes in. But
we've got
Rachel's in.
I made it.
Tell Rachel I did have to take it back way. 26 was backed up today, so I had to come a back way.
Did you take 11W?
No, I didn't take 11W. I did a couple back ways. Listen over here, Ben, it's been a long time since you've been in the Tri-Cities. No, 11. No, I'm just kidding. No. I took a different way.
Well, you know who is here? Our grandmother Mary is here. Grandma, we love
matriarch.
You.
Kiki. Love Keeks.
Thank you for being here, Grandma. Shout out to everybody over at the Blake. Jack, what's up, man? Great to see you. Okay, we got a great show lined up for tonight. And are you ready to answer some questions?
Oh, God, yes. I'm ready. Bring them on. Let's answer some questions. Let's go for it.
But before that, I've got to do two things. One, you put out an episode today on your YouTube channel, The Diabetes Tour Guide, on hyperglycemia.
Yes.
This is when you have too much sugar in your blood. So one, you've got the man here himself. The Diabetes Tour Guide is in the building. So if you have a question around hyperglycemia, hypoglycemia, which was from last week, make sure you take advantage and ask any of those types of questions. We got him here till 8 tonight. And then one more thing I got to do, Ange, before we get to questions.
Okay.
Is to anyone who's, you know, knows where a performance medicine is, Black Friday week is coming up. It's Katie Gegley's favorite week of the year. And we want to hear the phones ringing. We want to see you come in. Any of the offices, I'm going to put this up here. We're running our biggest specials of the year all week long, November 20th through the 24th. I'll be putting this up throughout. We're running a couple different discounts here. This is the Tri-Cities, and then this right here is for our Knoxville practices in West Knoxville and Fountain City. So guys, definitely, I mean, if you're a patient of performance medicine, there is no reason not to take advantage of some of these sales. So just remember, I'm going to put that up a couple more times so you can see, what those specials are. November 20th through the 24th, all week long. We are taking prepays, so you can prepay over the phone if you're not needing a visit or that service right then. So definitely take advantage of that. And with that said, Ange, can we get into some questions?
Yes, let's go for it. I'm ready.
Here we go. Let's start off with a tirzepatide question. Thoughts on using tirzepatide when only wanting to lose 15 pounds and an A1C of 5.6? For me, Ange, where does an A1C need to be? What's your thoughts on this?
Yeah. Ben, you're so good at podcasting. Can we just say that right now? Like, if I can bottle that, yes. Let's get that in so that we get your thoughts on this. You're good at this.
Thanks,
I mean,
man.
Like, come on, you're really good at this. I love the way you set this up. It feels very professional. So my thoughts. So A1C, technically A1C is how much sugar is sticking to the red blood cell. The portion it sticks to, which is like a little sticky pad, is A1C. And so the more percentage it's covered up, the higher that number becomes. It's 5.6%. So the higher the percentage, the more often, the more that the cell is covered or that spot is covered in sugar and is glycosylated and can cut the artery. So you want it lower is basically saying the less that's flowing around in the artery, the less opportunity it has to stick to the red blood cell. Technical definitions is that anything less than 5.7 is good, meaning 5.7 to 6.4 is pre-diabetes, 6.5 and above is diabetes. Technically, if you're looking from an integrative standpoint, an A for M, which is where we get kind of our credentialings to practice integrative medicine, you want to be 5.3 and below.
Okay.
That would be like A plus, B plus would be less than 5.7. So with this particular question, we're approaching pre-diabetes. There is weight that needs to be lost or wants to be lost or desired to be lost. I say absolutely, like 100% without a doubt. If you didn't have contraindications, if you have an opportunity to get tirzepatide or can afford tirzepatide, whether through compound or through the retail tirzepatide through Mounjaro or the new one coming out, Zepbound, mm-hmm. which is available after Thanksgiving, 100%. My thought process with that is that 15 pounds is easier to lose than 50. Mm-hmm. You want to start early with that. And I think too, you want to do that with nutrition and exercise. It cannot be understated how important nutrition and exercise and movement are. So you lose, if you got on tirzepatide at 2.5 milligrams or to 5 milligrams, you would lose 15 pounds. A1C would probably reduce as well, but it won't last unless you make changes with nutrition and eat it. And I just like thinking about nutrition of whatever fits you and whatever is manageable and tastes good and is more natural and less processed.
Now, I'm sure some people in here are thinking this. Say they lose the 15 pounds, they get their A1C down below 5.4, which is the A4M recommended A1C. Would you suggest that that person stay on tirzepatide and just lower their dose or get off of it once they've reached their goals?
That's good. I'd play around with it. I'd say once you're stable to weight, keep on the same dose that you're on for at least 3 months. Keep it steady so that you keep almost like I hit it. I feel like nutrition is where it should be. Exercise is where it should be. And I'm steady. Stay there for about 2 to 3 months and then start working down. I'd say work down in doses and keep it once weekly or work and do every 2 weeks. Technically, that drug has a washout period of 5 weeks. So it's in and out of your system completely in 5 weeks with the injections. It's indicated at 5 to 9 days. So 7 days to actually give the injection. Sometimes if you are on a larger dose and you do every other week, it can be kind of hard on your GI tract if you give it that much time in between doses. But I think working down is good. And that's just honestly to save you hassle and money.
Yeah.
I think that really we're going to see a lot of good benefits come out of this. I haven't seen anything negative. GIP, because tirzepatide is GLP-1 and GIP, two different gut incretin hormones. We don't have a ton of long-term data on what GIP does. GLP-1s have been out for a long time, and we're seeing a lot of good things that are happening within decreased risk of there's decrease, I think, by 40% of major adverse cardiovascular events from getting on something like semaglutide, the some of the older established drugs, the GLP-1s, because there's receptors both in the heart and in the brain.
These tirzepatide, that whole line of medications is just amazing. And thank you for mentioning the GLP-1 and the GIP. That is what makes the tirzepatides different and the Mounjaros different from the Ozempics and the semaglutides.
Yes.
Thank you for that question that came in over Instagram. Let's go to a question that came in over email. Do you think long-term, as in 20-plus years of Botox use, can cause facial muscle atrophy eventually, which will in turn make you actually look older at some point? It goes on to say, should you take long breaks occasionally, say 6 months to a year? So super, you know, I'm so thankful for this question.
Great question.
Because we've never actually gotten this type of question with Botox. So
I love it.
Yeah. What's your thoughts?
If I could raise my eyebrows, I would at this question, but I'm too toxed up to be, I'm kidding. Ladies and gentlemen, if you'll just look on one side of your screen, you'll notice one of the Rogers kids has had Botox and the other one has not. So
see all that movement?
Take it. Just kidding. I'm sorry. This is actually, I think this is a phenomenal question because I like kind of choosing your own adventure within medicine. And that's what I consider Botox to be. This is choosing your own adventure. If Botox is meant and indicated to decrease the appearance of fine lines and wrinkles by inhibiting muscle contraction. So all it is making your muscle go from here to here. So you don't create wrinkles. That's what Botox does. I think it's kind of the baseline of aesthetic treatments. It's almost like dip your toes into the Botox pool before fillers, or before the higher injectables, even like Sculptra, which is an like injectable dissolvable suture material. I believe it's PLLA or PLA2, forget the exact acronym, which increases collagen elastin. This is a great question because yep. I think it depends on the injection technique, where it is injected and how much and how often. So Botox is one of the botulin toxins or one of the, I think this is toxin therapy. Botox is just a brand of it. There's Dysport. There's a new one called Daxxify. There is Jeuveau. I don't even know if that's used as much anymore. And Xeomin and Dysport. Those are typically the ones that we've used. And we use mainly Botox and Dysport. So toxin therapy over a long period of time, it technically can cause some muscle atrophy if you do it too much too often. It's indicated every 3 to 4 months. And I think the doses that they really teach this stuff with is quite heavy. Sometimes too, it depends on what it's diluted with. You can have a 1-to-1 concentration, a 1-to-2 concentration, sometimes even a 1-to-3 concentration, which just means more solution to spread. I typically like 1-to-1 because where you stick it is where it stays, unless you're doing it around the eyes. Our injector in Knoxville, Amber, is brilliant at this, and she likes to spread in the forehead, and we don't really spread here much. But I think this question is, can it cause facial muscle atrophy? Yes, if used too much too often, and two, you don't allow those muscles to move at all. Some patients really like to be frozen. Typically, I like to not be frozen, and I like to spread out treatments just a little bit and kind of assess the face. People have different degrees of wrinkling, and Botox is not the only answer to get rid of that, which we'll talk about in a second. Can it actually make you look older at some point? So if we're not moving our muscles and we're doing nothing to our dermis, because it goes skin, then a tiny, tiny bit of fat, muscle, then bone. That's where everything lies. So the muscle's right on top of the bone. So you have to go down and hit the muscle with Botox. But your skin also ages too. So it's not just the wrinkling comes on the skin because of what the muscle's doing. So if you freeze the muscle, the skin relaxes. But you still need to work on the skin. And two, whoever wrote this is a great question. You're absolutely right. If you do not work on your skin, it's just going to sag off of a face that hasn't moved in a long time.
Yep.
So you got to stimulate all the other parts. So if you're thinking about collagen elastin production, you have to introduce trauma somehow. So introducing trauma is going to introduce heat or needles, or introducing product into the dermis. So that is going to be things like Ultherapy, which is ultrasound guided heat technology to stimulate 1 millimeter, 3 and 4, 4.5 millimeters deep into the dermis to help build collagen elastin, and that lifts. So I recommend if you're going to do Botox, make sure you treat your eyes. The things I actually have seen in clinic is that this part of the eyebrow tends to go down. So if you notice that this part is really down because you've frozen this corrugator so much so often, that's where you need the lift and the supporting structure to help get this up and out. That's where Ultherapy and Virtue RF or radio frequency microneedling, there's another brand called Morpheus, that delivers heat and needles into different parts of your skin layer to help build it up, basically. Sculptra 2 is another one that goes into the dermis that introduces the same material as dissolvable sutures that introduce macrophages, collagen, and elastin to help lift. So I think if you're going to freeze, you got to lift and you got to have good skincare. So skincare too, that is necessary for the top of what aging will look like, which is also texture and tone and lift. You want vitamin C serum. You want to protect your skin from the sun. You want to make sure that there's a really good sunscreen. vitamin C serum is an antioxidant and helps out with skin discoloration, sun damage, and wrinkling. And then two, retin-A's, a derivative of vitamin A. Retin-A, retinols. It's that. That's, yeah.
I'm so appreciative of this question here. And thank you for that answer, because I do think more people need to be thoughtful around this. And really, you have to I think, connect with your injector and understand kind of what your goals are. I'm really glad you mentioned the Dysport and the Botox and all the different types of toxins that are out there.
And the second part of this question is, should you wait like 6+ months or a year and take a break?
Yep.
I think it's important to switch your tox, which we haven't done a lot of performance medicine. We've really stuck with Botox, but we're starting to carry more products to switch it up for patients, because we've gotten it to where, oh, this doesn't work as long as it used to. Like, I'm only getting 2 to 3 months when usually I got 5 to 6, or I'm only getting 1 to 2 months. It's taking longer to kick in. Switching up your tox, I think, is good. There's varying degrees about how accurate that is about whether or not you've developed a tolerance. I just think it's good to switch it up. So I'd say if you've had Botox for several years, switch it up, or maybe even every other time you try it. I prefer lower dose targeted therapy. I prefer starting early and doing it once or twice a year, kind of starting in your late 20s. If you're really going to go at it, starting in your late 20s, once, twice a year, 20s, good skincare, start to do targeted old therapy, definitely radiofrequency microneedling, and then start to add in a little bit of targeted fillers at low doses. And then I'm having a planned facelift at 55. I'm just being honest with you. So, but that's my own adventure. People ask, do you have to do, you don't have to do any of this.
Yeah.
People say, do I need Botox? My first question is, do you want it?
Yeah.
That's so different than do I need it? But
I love that. I love that. Great.
I love talking about that stuff. Make sure you have a good injector and two, a good esthetician.
Yeah.
You need a good esthetician. We have Kelly, our sister is
the
one of the best in this area. And our Johnson City, like, we have 3 estheticians there now. We have Kelly. We have 2 Kellys and an Emily, and they're fantastic. We have one in Knoxville, Jasmine, who's amazing, but get a good esthetician too.
And that combo is key. I hope that helps, guys. If you have any questions along those lines, please put them in the comments. We're going to get to live questions here shortly. I want to, you know, I'm not sure about the what prescription this is, but you might. So I'm going to put this question out to you. What are your thoughts on this new prescription that supposedly helps with hot flashes, but is not a hormone? What is it actually doing to your body? If there is anybody here live that knows what this prescription is, I think it's been kind of a hot topic lately. So I'm really thankful for the question here. Do you know the prescription here?
I think I do.
Okay.
Unless it's something different, you can put it in the comments. But I feel it's Veoza or Veoza.
Okay.
I think that's what it is, and it's vesalenitant. The generic name, I'm not really sure. I think it's Veoza. I think these are non-hormonal, it's non-hormonal like menopausal symptom relief. Basically what that one is doing, it's hitting a receptor in your thermoregulator center. So it's hitting what is causing hot flashes. It's hitting the vasomotor symptoms. So a lot of what comes with menopause is a temperature dysregulation. So estrogen, progesterone tend to help control that. When those hormones are gone, you start to get some vasomotor symptoms or vasomotor spasms. And that's typically what's described as a hot flash or a night sweat. And that too, this particular drug, if it's Veoza or Veoza, it hits NK3. It's an NK3 inhibitor or an antagonist, which is part of the thermoregulatory center controlling temperature and can help decrease hot flashes in a non-hormonal standard. And I've looked this one up a little bit. You have to monitor liver enzymes with this one, because there can be, you can't use it if you have really severe kidney failure or liver failure or cirrhosis. So monitoring a metabolic panel is useful. And I could see, I just honestly never used it. I could see this being useful for those patients who have had hormonal cancers, and I have contraindications for those. So I could see that being a positive.
Yep.
if that's one of you and you want to try it, please come to Johnson City so we can try it. I'd love to see if this is actually something that's useful.
Yeah, I was thinking about that, you know, as for, you know, for women who've been through some sort of hormonal cancer and want to get rid of hot flashes and really just want to feel better. That's interesting. We also did a podcast, I think, on the Common Sense MD around the benefit of testosterone pellets in patients who have had breast cancer in particular. So anyways, this was such a great question, and I hope that helps. If you guys have any more context for us, let us know. We're going to keep moving here, and then we're going to get to live questions. This is around ozone and ultraviolet light therapy. Do you recommend it? Now, what is this? What is ozone therapy? Is that like,
delivery of oxygen to your tissues.
Okay.
So like just getting more oxygen in ozone, but ozone can be done a lot of different ways. You can have like dad has an ozone thing here. Like you can just actually have it in like a machine. Like this is an ozone machine.
Oh, no kidding.
I'm getting ozoned right now. So delivery of oxygen. Two, with the delivery of oxygen to your cells, it could just help with healing. It can help with your immune system. Oxygen is a good thing. That's why when you have oxygen depletion, you get your brain lives on oxygen. It's not good for your body to not have oxygen. You have hypoxia. So delivery of oxygen is good. That's like with when people do like blood doping, a lot of that is to take their blood out, ozone the blood and put it back into your body. So you have really oxygenated blood and it gets delivered to your muscles a lot better. So ozone, do I recommend it? Yeah. I don't have a great rule of thumb as to, I know more severe cases like ozone and hyperbaric oxygen, yep. Which hyperbaric oxygen is getting in a tank and delivering it at pressure. That delivers it at a higher intensity than just ozone. Although you can get IV ozone. I swear I think you can get it rectally too. Mm. I don't know. Someone told me that. I could be wrong. But IV ozone definitely exists. These exist with these machines. I think it's a good thing. I would say for high endurance athletes,
yeah.
I'd say too, if you're going and recovering from cancers and you need to boost your immune system, people do use it for anti-aging. And I think too, a lot of that would just depend on cost, like cost and time. I've been in a hyperbaric oxygen chamber. It's like, you feel like you're in a pressurized cabin in an airplane. You do need to do it several times to really, you have to actually be like on it continuously to notice the benefit for anti-aging and telomere lengthening and health of this, to basically reverse cell senescence or cell aging. But I do know patients and friends of mine who have had their family members go through it when recovering from chemos and cancers. That's a good time to use an ozone or hyperbaric oxygen or wound healing. Yep. Wound healing and hyperbaric oxygen is great. Ultraviolet's a little bit different. Ultraviolet is, it's going to stimulate vitamin D. Ultraviolet therapy, I think is great, but two, it can kind of come at the cost of skin cancers because you're basically getting the light from the sun that you need, whether it's through artificial measurements or from the actual sun, and it's going to stimulate vitamin D for your immune system, but it can come at the cost of deteriorating your skin and skin cancers and increasing melanomas. So I think it has benefits, but it needs to be light. It's almost like you need to do it sparingly. I wouldn't just go and all of a sudden you need to hit the tanning bed every day.
Yeah.
However, it can help with skin conditions like psoriasis. It can absolutely heal and kill like the yeast Malassezia furfur, which is a component of eczema psoriasis, the yeast component that's sitting on top of the skin. Sunlight's really good. You can just get too much of a good thing sometimes. So I think yes to both. If I'm choosing it at my age right now, I'm getting out in the sun rather than going in a tanning bed. And ozone, I would say yes, if autoimmunity gets to a point where I would see benefit, or if it were really convenient, then I would do it.
I'm going to put this up here from Mark. He's saying he had extracorporeal blood ozone, so EBO, EBOO, E-B-O-O, blood, ozone, and oxygenation. That's cool. That's in over in Knoxville.
Love to
hear it. Thank you for putting that in there, Mark.
Mark, you are my EBOO, okay? You're my EBOO, Mark. Mark knows, he knows what's up.
Thank you for putting that in there. And I'm going to put this up here from Jack. A friend of mine was put on gabapentin for hot flashes. So for anyone who was kind of their ears perked up with the last question around the prescription for the non-hormonal prescription. So thank you, Jack, for putting that in there. All right, let's keep moving here. We've got one more question that came in throughout the week, and then we got two more, and then we're going to get to live questions. So if you have a question for Andy, go ahead and put those in the comments, and we're going to get to every single one tonight. This question is, what are optimal ferritin levels for female athletes?
That's a good one. And we draw a lot of ferritin levels. Ferritin is basically iron storage. So if you're thinking about like A1C, it's like a study of iron stores. I often sometimes compare it to like iron to ferritin, glucose to A1C. It's not really directly related to that, but I think more iron stores. Ferritin, it depends on like micrograms or nanograms, but we've drawn, I believe the range of normal can be anywhere from like 20, 25 to 150. It's like quite a large range. And men have a higher threshold for that, up to like 300. So really when we're looking at low iron, we're looking at anemias and to hemoglobin, and all this is with oxygen delivery. So iron deals with the hemoglobin group, which helps actually deliver oxygen and makes it attached to the red blood cell to deliver to the target organ or to the target muscle group. So with female athlete means that females who have menstruation can lose their blood. They're more prone to having anemias and they're athletic. So they're actually needing a higher iron load, higher hemoglobin load for oxygen driving to the muscles. So basically they're at higher risk for having much lower iron stores and can deplete them, especially for endurance athletes using aerobic instead of anaerobic activity. So optimal, I don't really have a good number in mind, but higher end of normal. Higher end of normal and getting as much as you can through nutrition and then looking at different supplementations. Like I've had really good success with Vitron C. Vitron C is an over-the-counter iron supplement that has vitamin C in it. Iron's usually one that has to be absorbed on an empty lining of the stomach and needs vitamin C to be absorbed. So I've seen different numbers for this one. I've seen some be above 40. I've had some be closer to the mid-range of normal, if not higher. So it depends on I would say whatever standard you're going on, whether it's micrograms per liter or nanograms per deciliter, be on the mid-range to higher range of that normal because you're going to need more and you have more opportunity to lose it.
That makes sense.
At least I would say above 40 or 50, definitely above 40 to 50.
All right. Great question there. I love the ferritin questions. And I know it's interesting. Ferritin comes up. You have to think about the iron. It's taken me forever to kind of get that relationship, but thank you for the question. Great answer there, Ange. Okay. Let's see here. I see Katie Lynn's in here from our Bristol office. Welcome in. We got to get Andy to the Bristol office. I'm going to put this up here for Andy to see.
I'm coming, Katie.
Come on.
I'm coming.
Come on.
I'm on my way right now. Open those doors.
I see Carly's here. Carly in Kingsport, what's going on? Great to see you. all right, we got one more, then we're going to take live questions. So go ahead and put your question in the comments. And you know what? This is, I love this question. This came in last minute here, and I saw it, and I'm like, this is the perfect night for it. Because I don't know, and you know, we grew up, and you know, I remember us having these milk cartons of needles, and you know, you never know what to do with them. So, anyways, I've been collecting the needles from weekly tea shots in a water bottle. How am I supposed to dispose of them correctly once my water bottle is full? This is a great question.
That is good and very practical. So I've been collecting needles for 19 years. Yep. So you get creative on how you throw them away. too, with these particular injections, they're not safeguarded. So too, they do need to be disposed in a sharps container, like to, and technically a water bottle or to a milk jug, yep. like one of those really thicker plastic milk jugs and or orange juice, like a larger one that's a little bit thicker plastic. Technically, I looked it up in Georgia because when I was living in Georgia in PA school, I had that question and I looked at what the rules and requirements for trash was. You can actually do it if you label it sharps and contain it. You can technically throw it away in the trash in Georgia. I would actually have to look it up in Tennessee what the exact ruling is. The safest way is that every police department has a sharps drop-off. They have a sharps and narcotics drop-off in every police station. So I've had that to where a patient needed to get rid of chemo. Her mother passed. They weren't using the medication anymore. They wanted a safe disposal of it. So I actually took it down to the police department with her chemotherapeutic drugs and her sharps containers as well. We have some at the office. We have sharps containers. I don't know if we're going to be a recycling center for that. I don't want to. Maybe Katie can answer that one. Yeah. Maybe we don't offer that. But most doctor's offices have safe ways of disposing of your needles. But I'm almost positive that if you label it as sharps, put it in a thicker plastic container, make sure it's closed off and maybe tape the top of it, you can throw it away in the regular trash.
Such a practical question.
Actually, Ben, yeah. we'll just put your address down here. Just drop it off at Ben's place.
Yeah.
Okay. Just drop it off at Ben's place. That's a great practical question.
It's a great question. You know what? Do you know what how to dispose of batteries? Do you put batteries in the trash can?
No.
I don't think you're supposed to.
I don't think you're supposed to, but I'm pretty sure I have.
If anybody knows how to dispose of batteries,
there is some sort of like recycling days. Like Asheville's big on like you can give them your styrofoam or like I've thrown it away in the trash.
All right, guys, we're going to live comments now. If you have a question for Andy, go ahead and put it in the comments. Let's see here. Where are we at? Let's see if I can find one. I'm still searching. Okay. Question from Mark is, Thanksgiving also marks National Family Health History Day. Since most families seldom, if ever, gather to discuss medical issues, having relatives around provides an opportunity. What types of questions can be asked to guide your discussion in a meaningful manner? This is a very practical question heading into Thanksgiving. I love it.
Mark's the best.
How would you guide this discussion? I'm actually super interested. We're going to be spending Thanksgiving together.
Wait, go to that first part. Thanksgiving is just most family, son and I together. Yeah. Oh, that's a good question.
A great question.
I always start with gathering around the table and everyone names their favorite disease. Just go around. Just kidding. I'm totally kidding. It's a great icebreaker for new friends if you want. Just go around. It's guaranteed to have a laugh. Yeah. No, this is actually good. I would say, too, in a meaningful discussion, I'd probably – have you seen that Adele skit, the Hello
yes,
skit?
Yes, that's like, hysterical.
Like the SNL Adele skit is what I would reference. Bring up some really great music, have some peaceful conversation, and then, two – I would say to bring it up in a way that maybe you start with what you're going through. Just say, hey, here's the, kind of the things that I've been going through and here's what my health journey's been. These are the things that have been helpful for me, especially too, Mark, you've talked about how EBOO has actually helped with your health journey with autoimmunity and maybe your family members don't know it and it brings about the conversation of health. I do find that like, hot button topics are going to be vaccines and coronavirus.
Yeah.
So I'd probably say if you want to have a meaningful discussion that doesn't get political, I'd avoid those. But I would say opening up with your own health history and your own story to kind of share what you've been going through, what your health journey is, and ask if anybody else is going through other stuff that they want to talk about. It may not, maybe it's more one-on-one and less at the dinner table or lunch table so that you're not putting people on the spot to talk about their health histories. A lot of what I figured is that health is very personal and can be very, not to use trigger in a bad way, but can kind of trigger an emotion out of people. And especially too with health journeys and around Thanksgiving when food's involved and weight, maybe being cognizant of weight loss. And maybe that's not something, especially if someone is pounding pumpkin pie at your dinner table, you probably won't be like,
right,
hey, let's bring up how, or to get everybody on the table on Ozempic or Tirzepatide. And, but I think too, bringing up your own health history first and then seeing how that relates to other people and how you might be of service to them is a really beautiful, I think, really beautiful discussion. Thanksgiving is meant to be about sharing. It's meant to be about gratitude first. So being grateful is such a health, that's such a healthy thing for your body, your brain. Your brain has so much power over your somatic symptoms. Your mental health is super important. So that's why I feel like showing gratefulness at the dinner table is good, and showing gratefulness for health as well.
And we've also talked a lot about on this show just the health benefits of being in community and being around people you loved and love you back. And like, you know, I think the whole, you know, Thanksgiving Day should be like a health, is it health increaser? Is that like, it should increase your health just by, you know, being a part of it. But it's that's a great question, Mark. And, you know, 'cause I know, you know, a lot of times when you love people, family, especially, you want the best for them. And it's tough to kind of, you know, bring up some of these, tough topics.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Thank you, Mark. We're going to keep moving here. Let's see here. Where am I at? If you've got a question for Ange, go ahead and put it in the comments. I promise I will find it. Here's one from Jack. I've been having severe leg cramps the past few days. I thought maybe it was electrolytes, so I took some magnesium and calcium, but didn't help. Any thoughts on this, Ange?
Yeah, I would say depends on the dosing that you took and the type of magnesium. So I would look at the bottle and see what the attachment looks like. Really, I like the 3-NA oxide glycinates, sometimes citrates a little bit more for bowel movement. So if yours is just mag citrate, you might not see much change in leg cramps. So I'd probably try a different attachment and higher doses at 500 milligrams to 1,000 and looking at potassium.
Yep.
Potassium, like, I mean, like Ben, you're the king of leg cramps, tennis. Yep. Like yeah. Ben would be severely dehydrated out on the tennis courts. Pickle juice was a big thing.
Yep.
Like people will do pickle juice. Getting a little bit of potassium with bananas or salt, some sodium. You would do beef jerky.
Yep.
Didn't you do beef jerky? What are your thoughts about this?
I've done beef jerky. Sounds weird, but I used to drink a lot of Pedialyte.
Yes.
But the other thing, you know, there's a product out called LMNT that I found that has like kind of the best ratio of potassium sodium with not a lot of sugar. But yeah, LMNT would probably be my suggestion.
And getting some fluids in too. You need fluids for any of that stuff to work.
Could it be anything else though? Like, say it's not like an electrolyte problem?
Thing? Yeah. So too, if you're looking at leg cramps and muscle spasms, if it's just limited to the legs and not like fasciculations of your muscle, the entire body. I mean, like you can look at heavy metals. I've seen that too with one particular patient with like really severe like metal toxicity, having muscle fasciculations from head to toe, but that's like twitching. That's like not abnormal. More often than not, that's going to be dehydration in some sense, which is loss of electrolytes and the disproportionate of fluids, intracellular and extracellular. But I would say too, making sure thyroid looks good, anything related to metabolism. So I would check your CMP for liver function, electrolytes, kidney, and you will see dehydration there. And then too, even looking at skin turgor, like seeing if your skin doesn't tint up on its own, like skin turgor is a good thing.
Yeah.
You can kind of do your own. See too, there's something about calcium. So calcium, you'll have twitching here. There's like two particular tests you could do for hyper or hypocalcemia. And I think one of them is called a it's not check off, chalk see sign or something where you tap here and see if you have fasciculations or pain. And two, seeing if the leg cramps also has radiculopathy. So if it's coming in with nerve pain, pins and needles, to see if this is more neuropathy and not just cramping of the muscles, if it's involving the nervous system, then I would look at benfothiamine and alpha lipoic acid.
Jack, thank you so much for that question.
It's a great question.
Let us know if things get better. We're going to go to Spencer here on YouTube. Any thoughts on ways to increase appetite for a cancer patient? I'm seeing a lot of comments helping Spencer out. Thank you so much for that. What's your thoughts on this? How would you talk about this?
I don't know what the comment. I haven't read the comments yet. But cannabis,
yep.
Weed,
I see
is that what they've said? So cannabis, it's a huge one. Marijuana, yep. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I had to say, like, absolutely. So that stuff absolutely makes you have an increased appetite and also kind of decreases pain too. So cancer is kind of the one where you can kind of, they'll write, I don't want to say they'll write you anything, but that's one that you really want to watch for. You really want to make sure that these people have an appetite. So there's one, cannabinol, I believe there's an actual prescription for that isn't necessarily like, go find a weed dealer,
right.
But like, to Virginia, and I'm sure Tennessee soon has state laws for medical marijuana. A lot of states have it now too. So that'd be the first thing I'd go for sure. Tennessee is just a little bit hard to get that. Even just if you want to try something like a Delta 8, or a Delta 9, something as close to it without being cannabis, I think will help stimulate some of that and help them feel good.
What about Delta 8? Would that help at all with hunger?
I think so. I think that's worth a try. I haven't had the difference personally to tell you.
Yeah.
But I think too, but I think that's definitely worth a shot. But that's really the avenue. There is one particular one, I believe it's called periactin. It's kind of used in peds. It doesn't really work that well, but with peds, like to get kids to eat, periactin is something I've seen being written, and that helps stimulate an appetite.
All right. Thank you, Spencer, for that
That's
question.
Great.
I hope something helps here, because that's a big deal with cancer. Okay, let's go to all right, Linda. Linda was in the office today. Hi, Andy. It was a pleasure meeting you today. Do I need to take one berberine or two? I love this question.
Oh, Linda, we had so much fun. I loved meeting you today. Dude, you told me she watched the live in the pocket. This is so cool.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yes, Linda, I promise you, sometimes if you have been in the room with me, I will say, absolutely, I'm going to write this down for you. And then I don't. I have it written down on your chart. It is in our outbox. The girls came and find me afterwards. They're like, you didn't write that anything down for her. So two, I want you to do one in the morning, one in the evening to start. Berberine is very similar to metformin, around 400 to 500 milligrams to get going into that space. So even just starting with one in the morning, progressing to one in the morning, one in the evening, I think closer to max doses is going to be two in the morning, two in the evening, or one with each meal. But start with one for the first couple of days, see how you feel, and then progress to two until we see each other again. That is so cool. Linda, I'm so sorry. You firsthand got this. I do have it written down. It's just not in your hand.
Linda, thank you so
much. Yes.
Thank you so
and
much
some
for
of the
being
macro,
here.
The macro countdown I have too. Sorry.
Linda, we love you. Thank you for being here tonight on the show. Let's see here. Where am I at? I apologize if I'm missing people. Here we go. I'm going to put this up from Linda too. This is around the in-body composition analysis and not liking the results. I'm putting this up there because Robin actually was telling me I got mine done a few weeks ago in the West Knoxville office and, you know, it's really, because I know a lot of people are like scared of what it's going to show. And really not, what it's supposed to do is kind of give you a baseline so that you can see your progress. So so it's not necessarily about not liking the results or loving the results. It's really about kind of using that information. And I know Lucas Schmidt, our nutrition coach up in Johnson City, does a great job of kind of mapping out like macros and So anyways, I'm saying this, Linda, just to encourage you.
She knows her stuff. Yeah. Linda knows. I'm just going to tell you, if you need some tips too, Linda's got good tips.
There we go.
She does. She's so smart. I think it's so nice to have a baseline. A baseline and see it as opportunity. I even did one today. I have a guy starting carnivore, and I was like, you should get an InBody first to see how that changes your body composition with it. So he's going to do a 3-month after that, which is cool.
Super cool. Linda, thank you for putting that in there. And man, I'm looking forward to your next InBody scan, because it's going to, I'm sure, show a lot of improvement.
Yes.
When hopefully mine will too.
Yes. Yes. We all hope that. We all do.
All right. I don't think I'm missing any questions. If I am, I apologize. I'm looking. I see here. Evangelon loves the hair. And I don't, he's talking, he's not talking about my hair. He's talking about your hair.
Mine? What? This whole thing? Come on.
It's Baywatch level. This is very.
Baywatch level?
Yeah. Like,
what? I've never been more flattered than right at this moment. That is the nicest thing. I've been going for 90s. I'm going for 90s hair right now.
Are you really?
So listen, ladies and gentlemen, I'm on a lot of hair loss stuff right
now.
Can you
tell us your regimen?
I won't stop.
Go ahead.
I will not stop this regimen. So I start at the baseline. We look at naturals for hair growth and hair restoration, hair texture, and preventing hair loss. So the shedding. I'm on Dr. Rogers Happy Healthy Hair, and good God, I love it. Never have I had bouncier, lighter, fluffier hair than right now. If you tried to pull out my hair, you could not. I'm also on minoxidil and finasteride. I friggin' love it. I'm telling you, it has made my hair grow. It's made it thicker. And I haven't lost any. But two, a lot of that comes with you got to stay on it. I've made the conscious effort, the conscious decision that I don't want to lose my hair. And I started this. I've changed up how I wash my hair too. Apparently, we grew up not knowing you're not supposed to wash your hair every day. You want your natural oils in your hair. Really, you're only supposed to wash your hair like once or twice a week. And it's you're not supposed to strip all the beautiful oils. You're just supposed to clean the scalp. I'm learning a lot.
Man, teach me. You and I grew up the same way, and I think
we were L'Oreal shampoo kids
every day, sometimes twice a day,
sometimes twice. Yeah. So I'm not washing my hair as much. That's so nice. I love it. Thank you.
Thank you for that, Evangeline. It's David Hasselhoff is Jack. That's exactly right.
Yes. Oh my God. If only there is, I have a doppelganger. He lives in London and he looks exactly like me. I kid you not. I hope you can put this on the comments. He looks exactly like me, but with a lot of muscle.
Who is it?
It's the London fitness guy. I had a patient tell me, like, you need to Google this guy. It looks exactly like me, but with ripped muscle. So it's like, oh my God, I see what I actually could look like if I really honed in and stopped yoga and started bodybuilding. He looks like a bodybuilder version of me.
You're going to have to send me that. Let's get to Chuck's question. I love these insurance questions around the GLP-1s and GIPs, and then we'll get to Bianca's question here around the minoxidil. My insurance won't cover Mounjaro, which worked great. They do cover Ozempic, which after 4 months isn't really working for me. I'm on 1 milligram. How long before it starts working? For context, I know Chuck's had some success with Mounjaro. What's your thought? I know you're dealing with this every day with the insurance stuff. What's your thoughts on this?
It depends on what is your measurement. Are we looking at it for? I mean, you don't have to share on here if you don't want to, but when you're looking at GLP-1s, GLP, GIP, like Mounjaro, you're looking at it for weight or for A1C, for glycemic control. So sometimes you just have to work to higher doses. Some patients just need higher thresholds. And two, if you're looking at A1C, it's looking at nutrition, exercise, and maybe some other combination adjunctive therapy or adjuvant therapy like metformin. To see if you get the glycemic control for A1C reduction. Ozempic goes to 2 milligrams. I'd see how far up you could work on that. It's unfortunate. Like, the Mounjaro is great, and it's great for a certain patient population. My encouragement would be, well, how long before it starts working? It depends on the patient. I've had it work within the first couple of weeks for patients. And then really if you're looking at A1C, you're looking at 3 months to really see A1C changes. If you're looking at weight, I've seen it work as quickly as 2 to 3 weeks. And two, I've had it be delayed to where you actually had to work on 1 milligram and above to get your achieved goals. But if you're doing it for weight, making sure that you're doing the nutrition components with it, with exercise, and making sure that your hormones are there too. If testosterone's not there, it's going to be very hard to build muscle, decrease belly fat without that actual hormone. So it might just be the combination. But if you knew that Mounjaro did work, and then I was about to say, it might just be waiting to see when your insurance can cover a GIP, or looking at Zepbound and seeing if like a copay card for Zepbound would work for you, because it's going to be available in about a week and a half. I'm sorry. I know that's rough whenever we had so much when that worked for so many people for so long.
Chuck, keep us posted with
or go to the compound.
Yeah.
If that's an option.
Yeah. Keep us posted, Chuck. And, maybe it starts to work better as you're on it a little longer. But the insurance thing is a bummer, I know. Let's get to Bianca here. Are you on oral or topical minoxidil and finasteride?
Thank you, Bianca. I would love to talk about my hair more. Yes. Thank you. Thank you. I'm on oral.
Okay.
I'm on oral. So I think the oral works better than the topical. You can't have it if you're pregnant. It can be teratogenic for the minoxidil. Finasteride oral, really, I just see that used primarily with men, not women. But I have had one woman use it and really like it. The doses I do think matter. 2.5 milligrams minoxidil, 1 milligram finasteride to start when moving up slowly within each of those categories. The topicals work well too. I just think the oral works better.
All right, Bianca.
And they even make a compound where you can get minoxidil, finasteride, this Jamaican castor oil, and latanoprost, which is Latisse, and you can put it on areas.
All right. Thank you for that question, Bianca. Let's get to Velma's real quick before we call it a night. Can high blood pressure caused by anxiety be dangerous? What's your thoughts?
Good question. That's a good question. Sure. It can be depending on the level. So anxiety can cause sympathetic nervous system to go up, which then clamps down on your arterial system to see blood shunting to the muscles so that you can run away from the dinosaur. That's an anxious picture of, I need to move, I need to get away from danger. What happens a lot is we get anxious without actually moving because we live more in a modern social world where we're kind of the apex predator, and we weren't at one point. So two, high blood pressure, it just depends on the number, but over a long period of time, what happens is that you start to harden the arteries and they become stiff, and it's hard for them to push blood where it needs to go. And so high blood pressure, sure, they call it this, not just, I'm not a fear tactic kind of guy, that's not my gig, but they call it the silent killer because a lot of people don't feel high blood pressure. So I think a lot of it depends on the number, how long it's been with running these higher numbers, and two, finding ways to kind of decrease it. So if it's kind of occasionally that you get high blood pressure, they have kind of as needed blood pressure guides. Sometimes you can just use an alpha blocker like clonidine to acutely bring it down for anxious pictures. Sometimes people use benzodiazepines to help calm the anxiety, and then the blood pressure calms as a result from that. Sorry, did I just cut off?
I think you froze up. Can you repeat? I just lost you for about 5-10 seconds.
Oh, sorry. I think it's worth it to treat it. And two, we are either working on the anxious side or the somatic side. So if you're working on the somatic side, you're looking at blood pressure medications. I think Losartan, Lisinopril are some of the best. Then amlodipine. Then maybe even for this particular picture, whether if it's for you or a friend, anxiety and blood pressure, you can look at a beta blocker, because beta blockers can help relieve anxiety because you're with anxious pictures, your heart starts to beat a lot more and you can slow it down, which then has a positive effect on your blood pressure, so you can feel less anxious and have lower blood pressure. And beta blockers are the pill in the pocket. You can use those as needed. So dangerous, yes, depends on the number, depends on how long. And I think it's worth it to start early for that.
Velma, thank you so much for that question. Yeah. And keep us posted on that as well. I'm going to get to Evangeline's question before we call it. Evangeline is asking, sharp pain in elbow, but only when doing tricep skull crushers or similar movements. Dip downs and press downs are okay. Any thoughts on kind of the elbow pain here? I'm not sure. I know what a skull crusher is. What's your thoughts on this, Ange?
Skull crushers like this. It might just be the positioning of your hand. With elbow pain, you're usually looking at lateral or medial epicondylitis. So you're looking at kind of like tennis elbow or golfer's elbow is are two of the main modalities. A lot of that too is overuse. I would definitely, would this be tendonitis or more like a bone spur? I would say too, probably more tendonitis. So you're looking at more overuse of the actual muscle because you're innervating it. And those small muscles around the elbows depend on what your hand positioning looks like, because too, it changes what your elbow does. So to your hand positioning with that tight tricep skull crusher might be putting pressure on the outside of the elbow. So it sounds a little bit more like lateral epicondylitis rather than medial. So a lot of it is rest alleviating some of the pressure. So people will wear bands to kind of push pressure on the top part here so that it alleviates some of that inflammation down here. But I would take a break from it too. I would do ice. I would do some NSAIDs. If you're curious about bone spur, you will definitely see that on an x-ray. I'd say it's less likely right there to have a bone spur, more likely to have it on your heel. That's where I've seen it more than seen it on your elbow, but not to say that you can't have an extra calcification on that. But if it's with specific movements, I would say you'd probably have a little bit more constant pain with bone spur than specific movement pain or pain to palpation.
All right, Evangeline, I hope that helps. That's a great question. Guys, that's a show. How did we do? Ange, you did amazing.
It was amazing. You're amazing. Look at that podcast voice. That's a great podcast voice.
Guys, that
this
is a show.
Fantastic. I love all these. Y'all, this is so much fun. And also, too, I have to say for our staff to like,
yep.
Rachel, you're at work for freaking ever today. And you popped on, and she did send me a text of her cat. Rizzo was watching today too. So I'm glad Rizzo made it online. Like Katie and Carter, Carla, y'all all online watching this. Robin, are you kidding me?
Robin, what's going on?
Robin and the Jesus, y'all. Get your gut straightened out, okay? Get that gut straightened out.
For Robin here, guys, go watch the latest episode of Explain This, please. On
please.
EBV.
And Robin, explain that to me, Robin. Come on. I need help. I call Robin with questions all the time. We are so lucky. We're so lucky to have the staff.
Oh.
Like, I can't believe our staff's on here and our providers are on here after a long day. I can't believe I'm on here. God.
hey, to all of our performance medicine family, we love you. Thank you for being with us tonight after being in the offices all day. Goodness, guys, Black Friday's coming up, as we mentioned earlier on, our biggest sale of the year all week, the week of Thanksgiving, November 20th through November 24th. You can prepay over the phone, so you don't even have to come in. We're going to have, the entire staff's going to be on the phones answering phone calls and helping out. So, anyways, Ange, that was awesome, man. I had a blast.
That was great. I had a blast. And ladies and gentlemen, don't worry. We are going to get Ben on the talks train. Okay. It's happened once. Ben had a minor panic attack, but we're going to get him back on the table. Do not worry. I know I can feel everyone's worry and anxiety. And don't worry. Kelly and I will not let that face fade. Okay.
I see Kelsey from Bristol's in here as well.
Kelsey's on.
Man, goodness gracious. This is incredible. Allison's in here. Allison, so good to see you.
So nice.
Grandma Mary is informed.
I'm informed. Kiki, so you are informed.
Thank you.
Kiki, Yes. If anyone knows, it's Kiki. Okay. Kiki knows.
Hey man, I love you. Thank you for doing the show tonight.
I love you too. Okay. I'll see it.
Guys, can you do both Angie and I a favor? If you have not subscribed to the Diabetes Tour Guide, go over from Performance Medicine's YouTube channel on over to the Diabetes Tour Guide. Give him a subscribe there. We're putting out videos every single week. We got an interview with a type 1 diabetic going up next week. So stay tuned for that. Subscribe. Let's do it.
Subscribe. Just press play and go.
All right, guys. We're out of here. Love you. Love you guys. See y'all next week. We'll be back Tuesday, 7 p.m. Ange, I love you, man. Thank you so much for doing this.
I love you too. Have a good one.
Brad's got to do my outro. Where's Brad's outro?
Don't go away.
Thanks, guys, for listening to this episode of the podcast. Please share the podcast with your friends. And if you haven't subscribed yet, please subscribe. We will see you guys next time.